Arriva, Brighton Festivals Now. All of the news, reviews, and what not to miss at Brighton Festival with Melissa Dennett and Rebecca Sandals. On Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, the only station on air with a dedicated Brighton Festival hour.
Yes, you're listening to Radio Reverb 97.2 FM on DAB and online at radioreverb.com. I'm Melissa Dennett. This is Wednesday's Brighton Festival special. We're here Monday to Friday during the festival, 5 to 6pm, repeated 10pm and 9am the next day.
Hello, I'm Rebecca Sandals, and for the next 3 weeks we'll be looking behind the scenes at the Brighton Festival, meeting some of the performers, creators and the people who make it happen.
And today we're hearing about 20 years of anarchy with Spy Monkey.
We'll be finding out about the children's events at the festival,
visiting an installation which simulates an unusual visual condition,
and much more here in the next hour on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM.
Yeah, we're halfway through the first week of the festival, and I feel like it's been going for ages already. I'm knackered already.
Well, as I walked down to the studio this afternoon, I really felt Brighton was in bloom. You know, the Great Escape being set up, the festival banners fluttering. I went into the lighthouse on the way here and there's a festival banner there and at the dome. And then I just love it. And halfway through the first week, I don't know where I'm going to get the energy reserves from, Melissa.
I think we'll manage. So we are here for the next, 2.5 weeks to lead you gently but firmly by the hand through that festival programme. Because I think we all appreciate it. Sometimes you look at it and you just get flummoxed and you think, well, that looks interesting, but I'm not too sure. So we're here to take you through what's happening at the festival, meeting a lot of the performers, the artists, the producers, the people behind the scenes at the festival who really make it tick. So that is our job for the next hour, live here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM. This is the Brighton Festival special show.
And it's great fun doing this job. And hopefully we'll encourage you to have as much fun as we're having seeing some of the shows and also the installations. Talking of which, Distorted Constellations is an audio-visual installation by artist Wanda Ibizier. And examines the condition known as visual snow. Now, this condition creates a kind of distortion of visual perception. It's a relatively unknown condition, and Wanda herself only recently discovered that not everyone sees the world in the way she does.
Well, this prompted her to put Distorted Constellations together. It's a maze of mesh with projections and sounds. It's on now at Lighthouse, and I went there as it was being set up, and I met Wanda to find out more about the ideas behind it.
My name is Wanda Ibizier. This is Distorted Constellations at Lighthouse.
So we're in the basement at Lighthouse. It's actually being set up as we're speaking. And it's like a maze of light and colour. What's going on here?
Yeah, so we're downstairs in the install environment part of the exhibition, entering an Afrofuturist alternate reality which links to ritualised space that's kind of like linked to my brain. It's a kind of perceptual landscape which you navigate and experience a kind of alternate perceptual framework.
So this is connected to the visual snow syndrome, which is something which you have. How did you discover you had visual snow, and what does it actually mean?
Visual snow syndrome is a disorder that was discovered only a few years ago. I think it was only really named in 2014. And actually around that same time, I just happened to be talking to my parents about, and I said, oh, the sky looks really hazy tonight. And they were like, oh, no, hazy. The sky's not hazy. Maybe you've got cataracts. Go and see the optician. So I went to see the optician and did all the eye tests. They said, your eyes are fine, your vision's great. And I said at the time, what about all those little dots that I can see? And they were like, maybe you've got dry eyes, try some eye drops. So I tried the eye drops, but it didn't do anything. But I started researching online and just talking to more people and talking about perception in general. I happened to find this paper that had just been written about visual snow, and they realised it's this perceptual disorder. It's not in the eyes, it's neurological. Something seems to be different in some people's brains that means they see all these different things. The weird thing about it is it's not only visual. So there's things like everybody who has visual snow or experiences visual snow will see this kind of like analog TV static all the time. Most people will also have something called palynopsia, which means you see kind of after images. You know, when you look at a light source and look away, you can still see that light source. Yeah, we see these after images of everything. What I find really interesting about it is it's one of those things that demonstrates that how all our perceptual frameworks are really different. And so it's something that a few years ago nobody knew existed. And then since a few scientists have been studying it, there's thousands of people in the world, and it's growing all the time, because it's one of those things that you might not realise until you're an adult and you're suddenly confronted by it, that you realise that not everybody else sees like that. And so it got me really interested in perception in general and how there's lots of kind of like atypical perceptual effects. For example, synesthesia, that someone might go their whole life and not realise that everybody else doesn't smell colour or hear colour. Like, the real takeaway from this project for me that I'm really interested in people understanding is that actually we all have our own kind of discrete perceptual frameworks, and you really have no idea what somebody else is perceiving.
I've had a wander through here, and it's quite disorientating, not in a scary way, but it does change your perception. You're not sure if you're going forward into a light or into some kind of, there's very soft barriers here of a kind of mesh, and it does really throw out your perception of what you might see as reality.
Good, great, yeah. I mean, one thing I wanted to achieve with it is to give people a sense of my perceptual reality and give people a sense of disorientation and a kind of cross-modality of the senses. So scientists are beginning to understand more and more how certain senses interlink, and one sense can confuse another sense. I like this idea of, yeah, how the vision and the vestibular sense, which is the sense that governs our kind of uprightness. It's a sense that really goes off key when you're drunk, for example. Okay. How those two things conflicting can impact on each other.
I guess you'll probably get a lot of people who are neurodiverse, i.e. their brains don't work in the way that the majority of people's brains work in, coming along to this exhibition. How do you think people with different neurodiversities will approach this work? Because I would imagine you would get, for every 100 people that came in, 100 different responses.
Yeah, I hope so, and I'm really keen to hear people's responses who come. When we did it in Manchester, I had a day that was actually particularly for people who have visual snow. I think it was quite impactful witnessing a perspective that they don't normally get reflected to them. It's like, you know, it's like looking in a mirror, seeing your own perspective like projected back towards you, literally with projection. And I was really surprised by, I had one person come up to me who said, I have synesthesia and visual snow, and this was exactly like my reality.
Wow.
And I was like, that's really interesting, because I don't have synesthesia.
Yeah.
So it was really interesting that he found a mirror in something that I wasn't even realising that I was creating. I'm hoping that a lot of neurodivergent people do come, and that they see what's similar in themselves and what's different. And I'm hoping a lot of people who wouldn't consider themselves neurodivergent come and maybe find out that they're not as normal, in inverted commas, as they thought they were.
That's Wando Abizier talking about distorted constellations. It's at Lighthouse on Kensington Street, and it runs through to May the 19th. It's Wednesday to Sunday, noon till 7 p.m, and hurrah, it's free. And Rebecca, you went to see that, so I actually popped in on my way down to the studio as well. It's remarkable, isn't it?
I loved it.
Mm.
You know, I'm not neurodivergent. That's the expression she used to describe people with conditions similar to hers and others, and seemingly a myriad of conditions I was not aware of.
Mm.
I loved it there. She talked about it making us aware of our own discrete perceptual frameworks.
Yes.
And it's one of those things I've always said to people, whatever we as an individual see, if you and I both looked at a wall and immediately described it to someone, we would say different things. So, but this is on another plane. But as far as an experience, if you're thinking, well, what does that mean? What do I see if I'm not neurodivergent? I don't understand. It's kind of like being at a gig, but right up close to the lighting effects display that's going on. So there's a soundtrack, there's the lights, there's the images being broadcast in front of you. I went in, there's no one else in the main room.
Right, yeah.
And I sat down for about 15 minutes watching, and it's fascinating. I'm going to go back and sit down again. And there's a second room to sort of chill afterwards.
Chill out zone. Yeah. I think probably every time you go there, it'll be slightly different, because when I went there, when I interviewed Rwanda, when she was setting up, the technician was using these like dotted lights throughout it. And then when I was in today, there were kind of shapes of dancers moving through it all. So I think you could go at any particular time and you would see something quite different, have quite a different experience.
And the thing to note, actually, is it is accessible. You can get in there, wheelchair users. There's a lift to go down and go round it. It's also the chill-out room. I noticed, marked on it, that it's designed with people with autism in mind.
Yeah.
So it's a really accessible piece. It is free. It's right in the centre of town at Kensington Gardens. And I mean, I don't know if anyone cares what I think, but I thought it was great.
No, so. I thought it was terrific, absolutely terrific. And I think as well, some things you have to kind of know the backstory in order to get it. But I think this is one of those ones where you can just go in and you can just be in it and you can just be immersed in it, spend as long as you want. When it is open for 7 hours, so you could spend 7 hours in there if you were so inclined, or, you know, just dip in and out. But it's definitely one that I want to go back and see, and so I would definitely recommend it. So Distorted Constellations, it's at Lighthouse, Kensington Street. And just a quick reminder, it goes right the way through till the 19th of May, Wednesday to Sunday. The time is noon till 7. It's a free one. I'm going to be talking about some more free things later on in the programme as well. You listen to Radio Reverb 97.2 FM. This is the Brighton Festival special with Melita Dennett and Rebecca Sandals, looking behind the scenes at what's happening at the Brighton Festival. Got a bit of music now. The Acca Trio are going to be playing on Saturday at All Saints Church in Hove. It's unfortunately sold out, but, you know, our mantra is always try and get some return tickets. Anyway, if you're going to see Acca Trio, or even if you're not, this is a taster of what's going to be happening on Saturday. This is Joy. And breathe. Chilled out sounds there from Acca Trio. That track is Joy, and they're playing Saturday at All Saints Church in Hove. It is sold out, but our recommendation is always to you to try and get some returns on the door, because I know that people do kind of block book chunks of tickets for the Brighton Festival, then don't necessarily go. And also there are some free events taking place around that Distorted Constellations. And Rebecca, you were telling me while we were listening to the piece about Distorted Constellations, there's an event taking place on Saturday.
There is. I understand it is ticketed via the Lighthouse. There are only about 20 tickets. It's showing as sold out, but worth keeping an eye on. If you're passing by the Lighthouse on Kensington Gardens, drop by
Street.
Kensington Street. Check and see if there's any tickets that come back, or if you're passing. I think it's at 7 o'clock on Saturday, but to check the programme. It's worth sort of dropping in and seeing if there's been any no-shows, because unfortunately sometimes the free tickets, people don't show up, which is really
naughty.
Annoying.
It's very naughty, very naughty.
Really.
Whenever your Brighton Festival does feature a number of free events, so let's have a quick look at what's on offer in 2019.
So, well, we actually spoke to Serge Attaquay-Clotty. Now, he's the artist behind Current Affairs at Fabrica. Now, it's a striking collection of recycled materials, notably 25-litre jerry cans that are transformed into art. And it's a pretty politically charged piece.
It is.
And we talked about it on the programme yesterday. And basically, Serge is sort of helping to transform his community in Ghana via pieces of plastic from jerry cans. So, fascinating. Read the backstory beforehand when you go in to see it,
yes,
or on the programme.
You do need to know the backstory to that one for it to make sense. Otherwise, it just looks like a whole bunch of plastic. Really.
It is a whole bunch, of, plastic,
a whole bunch of
plastic. But
yeah.
the what it's about is you're part of the journey that plastic is on, and you're part of a journey which is making a difference to a community in Ghana. So it's absolutely fascinating to sort of get a sense of the story and then see all of the pieces of yellow plastic around at Fabrica.
So yes, Fabrica Gallery in Ship Street, going on till the end of the festival. And it's free. More free things. Iron Men at the Phoenix Gallery. Now, we heard about this on our first programme this week. Our reporter Josh went down to see that. We haven't been to see it yet. It sounds great, though. It's portraits of Bamako in Mali's iron workers. It's by a Malian photographer, Toto Tala King Masasi. And his work is described as a mix of the staged and the spontaneous, inviting the viewer to take a renewed look at the world. So it's iron workers, I can think, in their natural habitat. habitat, like working in Mali, and apparently like very, very striking black and white photographs taking place at the Phoenix Gallery. We'll get to that, and we'll let you know what we think of that. That's running through till Sunday, May the 26th. That is free.
Yeah, that's free. And the thing is, I've worked out, actually, you could do Current Affairs at Fabrica, Iron Men at Phoenix Gallery, Constellations at the Lighthouse, and it's a nice paramble around the centre of Brighton.
That's true.
All of which are free. Check the days, though, because they're not every single day of the week. So I think some don't open Monday, Tuesday, etc. So yeah, plan your little trip round. But, yeah, and I'm looking forward to seeing Iron Men at the Phoenix as well.
Marvellous. This is Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM. It's the Thursday. It's Thursday. It's not. It's the Brighton Festival Show. It's Wednesday's. Rewind. I'll cut that bit out. It's Wednesday's Brighton Festival Show with Rebecca Sandals and Melita Dennett, taking you on the inside track of the Brighton Festival. Festival, of course, always has stacks of events for children and young people over the course of
Melita's
the month.
Melita's favourite, the children's events.
I love the children's events. I did something really bad in a previous life to go to the children's parade. Anyway, Hilary Cook is one of the people behind the children's events programme. And she came to Radio Reverb, where I began by asking her why it's important to include young people in the festival.
I think it's lovely to get kids involved in seeing things, going to theatre, going to see music, going to see book events, because they're going to grow up and have that love all through their lives, hopefully.
And you see it actually having an impact in terms of a continuing interest in literature. And obviously, I guess you have to get schools involved as well.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we have two schools projects, Adopt an Author, which is sort of quite bespoke, with four authors being adopted by four classes. And they email each other back and forth and then have a lovely party, just that little class and their little private party with their author in the festival. And then we have the big project, which is Young City Reads. And that's run by Collected Works, and they do lots of stuff with schools all the way up to May. And then we have a massive Young City Reads event in the festival, in the Brighton Dome. The author this year, Anjali Q. Ralph, who's written a lovely refugee story called The Boy at the Back of the Class, won the Blue Peter Award for Best Story. So that's a nice bit of news.
That was a bit of foresight for you to get her in.
Well, yes, that's Collected Works chose her, and we were just thinking, this is a good book. This is nice. It's her first novel. You know, it's a refugee story, but it's done with such lightness of touch, and it's about friendship and empathy. These kids get like a new boy at the back of the class, and he can't speak English. Why isn't he saying anything? What's the matter with him? And they make friends, and it's a really nice story.
So this year the guest artistic director is Malian musician Rokia Traore, and she does a lot of work with young people as well. Was that part of the thought process, that she is bringing a lot of stories around migration, refugees, the idea of home? So that was a deliberate tie-in with her.
Definitely. I mean, she's a lot about stories and how stories travel. So refugee stories work really well. We've got another author in the young literature section, Nadine Kadan, who's also an illustrator. And she writes picture books, so for a really, really young audience. But the hero of her book Tomorrow is a little boy living in Damascus. So she manages to make these stories accessible. So that really fits in with Rocky's themes about home, about travel, about migrants, but also the way that stories travel, even when the people don't, across the world.
Do you find that the kids get really excited when they get to meet a real life published author that they've read?
Oh, definitely. They're real. You get real little fan girls and boys. I mean, we've got an author called Holly Smale coming, and she's been before, but she's got a whole new set of books called Meet the Valentines, and she has those sort of early teen girl fans, and they just adore her. They just love her. So it's always, but they always have very, very good, very intense questions for her, which
good
is nice.
Good,
yes,
yeah, yep.
Very impressive.
So the Young Literature Stand, maybe better known previously as 26 Letters,
yes,
but the name has changed this year.
What's
the flavour for this year?
The flavour this year, well, we've got some big authors that have never been before. Anthony Horowitz is going to be appearing in the Theatre Royal, and he's going to be interviewed by a local author called Ellie Griffiths. And I've been asking him to come to the festival for about 100 years. And he always goes travelling and does a lot of events abroad. He's a huge author. And this is the first year they actually said, yes, he'd like to do that. I was so thrilled. So that's really nice. He's a big author and he's never been before. And then we've got some other authors who are new to Brighton Festival, quite new to the literature world. Like there's a woman called Sophie Henn, who lives in Lewis, and she's an author-illustrator, and she's written some great books. The first one's called Bad Nana, and it is about a little girl and her quite naughty nana, and it's quite women behaving badly, which is always a positive thing, really.
The whole world of children's books has changed dramatically since Enid Blyton, Famous Five,
Thank
and the Secret
Lord.
Seven.
Yes.
So they are dealing with a lot of very serious issues now.
Yes, I think so. And even I think there's a real skill in bringing big themes to kids, really. I think you can talk to children about anything. It's just how you do it. In fact, one of the events is actually for adults, but it is about, it's called Writing Big Themes for Small People. And it's got four authors on a panel. And they're going to be talking about books that deal with things like grief and loss. Because a lot of people, when, you know, sometimes it'll be children asking about death. What does this mean? Why, you know, where's... or they've lost somebody in their life. And it's quite nice to use picture books and young chapter books for kids to help introduce those subjects if they bring them up or need to talk about something like that.
How do you choose the authors? Do you ever get feedback from parents to say, oh, you know, my child really loves this particular author.
Yes.
Can you get them here?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, years ago, we used to ask the children to say, who would you love to see here? But they did tend to choose quite a lot of dead people. So, like, please, could Roald Dahl come to the festival? So now, yeah, so parents are probably better, and teachers. They have, you know, teachers actually, because we have quite a lot to do with them, with Adopt an Author and Young City Reads, and they'll go, have you heard about this amazing person? And you know, often they've heard of people I haven't heard of at all, so it's lovely to get recommendations.
And are you a little bit of a fangirl yourself? Are you sometimes in awe of some of these authors who come down?
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, I'm actually a big illustration fan, so I'm quite a big fan of all the picture book authors, and because some of them are, you know, works of art. We've got so many talented authors and illustrators that live near here as well who are coming, so which is a lovely thing. But I'm always a fan of all my authors. Yeah.
So not just literature, loads of entertainment events for young people and children.
Yes,
happening in the festival.
Yeah,
as well. So I guess people go to the festival brochure to find that.
Yes, I mean, some of them, there are some great things that are for families as well, like the circus. We've got Trap Town. There's going to be a big sort of circus coming to the Dome, which works for all ages. And some lovely outdoor stuff, although one of the outdoor performances we've got is something called Silence, which is down at Black Rock, and that is actually quite dark and heavy, so that is not a family audience. It's got, I think, but that is going to be amazing, quite an intense experience. But then also we've got The Moon, which is going to be up at Queen's Park.
Which looks great.
I know, it's apparently just stunningly beautiful. And there's also Ghost Caribou are going to do a sort of walkabout amongst the sort of performance amongst Under the Moon on Queen's Park. And that's just a fantastic free event. And I think it's very important to have free stuff in the festival as well.
And that was Hilary Cook talking about the vast range of children's events in this year's Brighton Festival. Later on in the programme, we're going to be hearing about Curiouser at the Bright Helm, which runs from this Friday through to Monday.
Melita, I have to say, that interview there, classic Melita phrase of... children's literature has changed quite a bit since Enid Blyton's Secret Seven.
What's wrong with that? It's true. I like the fact that all the kids ask for dead authors. I think that's brilliant.
I know. What's the top lineup? Can we please, can Melita and I have Enid Blyton, C.S. Lewis and Tolkien, please? What's the problem with that? It's the Dead Authors Society.
Dead Authors Society. Maybe we should do a whole bunch of children's events based around dead authors, and we could, I don't know, disinter them or something like that. No, I'm going down a completely bad road here. This is Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM. It's the Brighton Festival special show.
Now, tonight at All Saints Church in Hove, tonight being Wednesday night, at All Saints Church in Hove, there's a remarkable show by the violinist Sam Sweeney. It's all based on Sam finding a fiddle in a shop in Oxford and the story behind it.
And the whole album that I've made is really inspired by the story of this amazing instrument. Now, about 10 years ago, I went fiddle shopping. And I totally fell in love with this one, so I bought it, and I took it home. I looked inside this F-hole here, and on the inside it says Richard S. Howard, Leeds, number 6 violin, 1915. But as you can see, it looks really new, and obviously hasn't been around for, you know, 100 and a bit years. So with a bit of research from my dad, he found out that Richard Howard, in 1916, he joined the British Army, went over to Flanders, and unfortunately he was killed at the Battle of Messines, leaving behind all the carved pieces of this amazing instrument. But somehow, all the pieces, the unfinished pieces of this violin, made their way into the hands of a violin maker from Oxford, and he finished making it. And then I was the first person ever to play the finished instrument. I never planned to make a solo album. It was very much not something I was ever going to do. I play in other people's bands. That's kind of what I do, really. So it's been amazing to collaborate with these incredible musicians on something that's mine. I still can't quite believe this is my record. I'm still sort of riding that wave. The album's called The Unfinished Violin. I guess, you know, the simple reason is this was left unfinished, you know, in a workshop somewhere in Leeds. I guess that's the simple reason it's called The Unfinished Violin, but I like the idea that, you know, it's still not finished. I'm just the guardian of these bits of wood, and then when I'm finished with it, it'll go to someone else, and they'll keep playing it, and so on and so on. But also, I think the other thing with this record is a lot of the tunes on it have been sort of claimed by the war. I really hope that people will love this album as an album and not just stick it on and think about the war. It's a standalone record that's based on that theme, but not solely for that purpose. I guess it's just a bunch of melodies that I absolutely loved, and I wanted to put them together. The fact that it's kind of related to the war is kind of happenstance, really. It's just a record of beautiful melodies, as far as I'm concerned.
That was Sam Sweeney on his Unfinished Violin, and that's being performed tonight, Wednesday, 8 p.m. at All Saints Church. Sounds lovely, actually, but I can't make that because I'm going along to the Theatre Royal to see Knee High, Dead Dog in a Suitcase and other love songs.
Now, I'm not sure what to make of this at all.
Well, I think that's part of its kind of attraction for me. I don't know what to make of it. It seems to have it all going on. You know, music and I think I'm old enough to go. I think it's again got a sort of parental warning attached to it. What's it say?
It's based around John Gay's The Beggar's Opera.
The Beggar's Opera, indeed.
So it looks extremely dark. It looks very dark.
Yeah, well, my last experience with The Beggar's Opera was when I was about 14 in a school play, and it was quite dark then because I was thrown off the chorus for marching out of time. So I'm giving John Gay's Beggar's Opera a second chance in Knee High's format. We'll see how that goes, and hopefully be back to tell you all about it.
Well, I'm going to be going and having a chat with them tomorrow morning, so I'm going to pop down to Theatre Royal. I better go to the right place, didn't I? So I'm going to go and catch them tomorrow morning. I want to hear what you have to say about them. So we'll be talking. I think we'll make Thursday Dead Dog Day. Can we do that?
We can, as long as we don't contain the very strong language and sexual references that the show does.
Fine, okay. Well, I'll find out all about that when you let me know your review of that tomorrow. Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM, Brighton Festival Special with Rebecca Sandals and Melissa Dennett. And Brighton Spy Monkey are regulars at the Brighton Festival. Their shows are always unpredictable, they're anarchic, and they're frequently extremely daft. Well, they were last here with The Complete Deaths. That was all the deaths in Shakespeare put into one show. And now they're bringing Cooped to the Pavilion Theatre in Worthing. It's described as Hitchcock's Rebecca meets the Pink Panther. So I met up with Spy Monkey's Petra Massey to find out more about the show and 20 years of being a spy monkey.
Hmm. My name is Petra Massey and I am the female company member of Spy Monkey.
20 years of Spy Monkey, you've been in it from the start. Did you expect to see two decades?
Yes, and more. I'm going to be in Spy Monkey until we die. That's what I think. Whether they want to or not, I don't care. I think just for the hell of, like, the four of us sticking together until we die and being really wrinkly and still getting our little bodies out would make me laugh. Don't know if it would make other people laugh. But yeah.
That hasn't changed at all over those years, because what everyone expects from Spy Monkey is clowning, surrealism, stupid songs, all-round daftness, physical theatre, juvenile humour. Has it mutated and shifted, or is it still pretty much as it was on day one?
I would say in one respect it hasn't changed a jot, especially because we're going to be doing the show Cooped, which we did when we were in our 30s, and we are changing it up a little bit. But our work there, yeah, it's definitely developed. I mean, the most recent show, well, we know we just did Christmas Carol, and that was our first attempt at a family show, which it was still a fruity show, and there was enough in there for the adults, I would say, and it still had that irreverent, subversive sort of tilt, lilt. But there, it was definitely four kids, four families. So we were really, really proud of that. That was with, and then the show we did before that, which was definitely in a different direction, with the brilliant Brightonian I, Tim Crouch. And we did a show, Complete Death, which was a completely different exploration for us. Yeah, really, really interesting. It was really challenging. So, yeah, I think over the years, our work has definitely developed. And maybe Complete Deaths isn't our funniest show, but I think
it was all the deaths in Shakespeare, wasn't it?
It was 75 deaths in Shakespeare, yeah. And that was a brilliant challenge. I didn't even know there was that many, including The Fly. And Tim took us to a different place. Tim took us in a very different direction, and we struggled with it. But I think it was really good for us as performers individually and as a group, just to grow and know that we don't always have to rely on the gag and the funny, that there are, you know, other ways and other approaches. And I was really proud, actually, of the work. Even though it might not be my most favourite Spy Monkey show, I was really proud of it.
Going back then to Cooped, so Cooped is a reworking of an older show. What was your process in looking at that older show and going, like, well, here we are, however many years later. You know, this is what's worked, this is what didn't work. This is how we're updating it.
Interestingly, the political climate has changed quite dramatically from when we did it in our 30s to now. And we're reworking some of the numbers. And we've had lots of big discussions about that, because I think we never do shows or theatre or anything to shock or to offend or to upset. We do it very much from the clown perspective of finding things funny in a very joyous and naive and sort of fresh, with fresh eyes kind of way, which is how we approach the work when we're in our 30s. And now there are certain things in that show that will not be probably received in the same kind of way. And we've had kind of lots of, not difficult conversations, but kind of we're all in a little bit different camps. But we've decided there's one or two numbers that we don't want people just to focus on that because of the change in political climate. So we're moving things on, and I think that's a good thing.
This is political correctness, is it? For want of a better phrase.
God, in a way, yeah. I mean, I never thought I'd kind of say that, because I kind of like to think that, you know, we can do anything. But I think now you just can't, really. I think you have to be careful, and I think it's quite a delicate place, this world right now. And I think we have to look out and look after each other. And if that means honing down our comedy a little bit, and I can hear lots of people going, oh, you loser. But I don't know. I just think, yeah, I think we have to be more sensitive. And I think it's necessary at this particular time in our lives. And I think it's a bit of a wake up call, really.
So Cooped is described as Hitchcock's Rebecca meets the Pink Panther.
Yeah.
How? Where?
Gosh. Yes. I mean, it is very cartoony in the way Pink Panther's very cartoony, but we've tried to tell a story, a brilliant kind of love, and very a twisted story you know, in the same way with Rebecca, that it's, you know, set in an old country mansion and it's very stylized in that way. And it goes off left field. It goes into all these different kind of different worlds. But then we keep coming back to the story. The story we kept, you know, it's a classic kind of almost like an Agatha Christie. So people can hang on to that kind of framework, which means that we can divert off into the very cartoony world and then keep coming back to the thread of the story as well. So that means that we can release all sorts of kind of comedic effects and worlds, which if we just stuck to the story, we wouldn't be able to. And also it's our way of crowbarring in all the things that we've always wanted to do on stage, basically. Come and see it.
You're performing it in Worthing. Do you think Worthing is ready for Spy Monkey?
Totally. Are we ready for Worthing? That's the thing. No, I tell you, the Worthing Pavilion have been amazing. I think it's the best publicity we've ever had. And we're really proud, actually, to be part of extending the Brighton Festival to Worthing. It's the neighbouring town, and I love it. I really, really like Worthing. And I think it's really good that Brighton Festival is supporting, you know, theatres further afield now. And it's spreading. We're spreading. Yeah, who knows? Where's next? Don't know.
Spy Monkey's Petra Massey was talking about Cooped. That's taking place at the Pavilion Theatre in Worthing, Wednesday the 22nd through to Sunday the 26th of May.
You're listening to Radio Reverb's Brighton Festival Show with me, Rebecca Sandals, and Melita Dennett. Now, Curiosa is a piece for children which combines dance, projections, music and animation to create a space where things may not be as they appear. It's loosely based around themes from Alice in Wonderland.
Creators Yael Flexer and Nick Sandiland and Norwegian company Dibwick Dance have created this piece for 3 to 6-year-olds, which runs at the Brighthelm Centre from this Friday all over the weekend through to Monday. I went to meet Yael and Nick to find out about Curiosa.
I'm Yael Flexer, this is Nick Sandiland, and we're Flexer in Sandiland, and the piece we're going to present is Curiosa, and it's a work for children from the age of 3 onwards and their parents or carers.
I'm working with Yael, and we're also working with a company called Dibwick Dance, who specialise in children's performances, and it's a new venture for us. So we've created an immersive environment, a big projection screen that audiences go into, so there's no separate stage, the audiences are in the stage or on the stage. The piece is a very large projection screen that we go into, and we're surrounded by a large environment that, or a number of environments that we travel through. It's loosely inspired by Alice in Wonderland, not by the characters, but the idea of big and small, and relating this to the child and the parent, and acknowledging that little obvious but sometimes overlooked aspect of relationship between the two. And so they go into this very big environment, and sometimes it shrinks down to a very small environment. They also have a series of interactive bowls that they hold that also have video inside them. There are characters, two performers who take you through the show, and also animated characters that accompany them as they go through. And these characters and performers sometimes appear live, sometimes appear on the screens, and they slip between one screen and the other. So you might have a large giant appear suddenly on the big screen, and they might shrink or slip slowly into the little bowls that the children hold. So they move from one place to another. So it's very is a sort of a surrounding and immersive environment that we're placing people in.
It sounds technically challenging. I mean, having the live choreography, having the children actually there with the dancers, the digital projections, the text, the audio, what kind of logistical headache is it putting it on in the Brighthelm Centre?
It's been okay so far. I mean, it's a sort of set that can go in any space that's big enough. So in that sense, we're self-contained. And I think it is interesting to combine all those different elements, and that was part of the process. But the performers are really adept at working with children. They certainly, the Norwegian performer only performs to sort of children, babies, families. So she's really accustomed to having the kids suddenly get up and join in. And the show is built in a way that it invites those children and the parents, if they want to get up and dance and intervene in the show. And the technology is really helpful in kind of making you, as Nick said, immersed in the experience. So you might be underwater, or you might be underground. and you just feel those environments. But at the same time, the sort of roles that we have mean that the attention of the kids is always taken to different places. So they're never bored, and there's a really good balance between getting up and moving and then just following the performers and being really focused on seeing dance, which for most of those children, that's the first time they've seen anyone maybe move in that way. And then having those balls that you have that intimate space, and certainly the kids really respond well to the animation, and they might shout out what they see, and the show is really built for that. It's really open for that interpretation.
Yeah, because people aren't put on stage, they're in the stage, they there's no sort of boundary there. So yeah, a lot of children sometimes sit and just take everything in and quite quiet, but they're playful at the same time. Others join in a lot more, and they, as yeah, also say, they you know, join in and shout and run around, and that's all part of it. So it is the dexterity of the performers who really embrace this and take each performance as a different event, really, and it becomes its own personality.
Much of your work revolves around people's relationships with each other or the performer's relationship to the viewer. Are there those additional layers and subtext within this piece, or is it just for fun?
I would say it's the same. I think where it started from is that obviously we are parents, and we were kind of interested in the fact that what we do at home, dancing with our children, doesn't necessarily happen in other homes. And so it's about creating that intimate space where you can be together, you can just be in your body. So I think the setup is very similar to other immersive works that we might have made for adults, in that you can just kind of breathe a little bit, and there's these beautiful cushions who just allow you to kind of recline and be in your body. So there's that very personal feeling about it.
Yeah.
You do a lot of work nationally and you have international collaborations. Is there a buzz in playing a hometown gig in the Brighton Festival for you?
It's really exciting to be at home, to play at home, and to have kind of our son's friends join in and come to see the show and some other. Yeah, so I think it means more when you're at home. It means everywhere, and every show is important, but I think it's always a delight to see people that you know personally kind of experience it. Yeah.
It's very nice to be home, I must say. I think it's about the third time we've done Brighton Festival, and it's a joy, really, just popping down the road and we've got this show happening. Yeah.
Yael Flexner and Nick Sanderland talking about Curiouser. That's at the Brighthelm Centre from Friday through Monday, and there's three performances on a day. And I think it sounds like it might be just as much fun for the adults as the kids, actually. Sounds great. It sounds really good.
I get jealous of some of the children's show listings, not having a little kiddie around readily accessible to snatch and take along as a justification for being there enjoying it myself.
Yeah. We've just been looking at the programme, actually, and just seeing the amount of things that are on tonight. It's a really busy night tonight.
It is, isn't it?
King of Ghosts is on at 7:30 at Brighton Dome Concert Hall. I had a conversation with Sean McData yesterday. He's put this together with the City of London Sinfonia. And there's lots of films. One of them is a bunch of films from the BFI National Archive of India under the days of the Empire. And it sounds like absolutely fantastic unseen footage with a live soundtrack. I do love a live soundtracks to film. And then there's a psychedelic Satyajit Ray film, Gupi Gayan Bagabine, with this new soundtrack which has been created by Sean McData and the City of London Sinfonia. So taking place tonight at the Dome at 7:30. I think you were just looking up to see if there are tickets available.
I was looking
up,
and it does look like there are tickets available. So, and I think there may be standby tickets at that event if you qualify for a standby tickets. And standby tickets are available for under 26, over 60s, people who are on unemployment or disability benefits, members of Equity, Brighton Festival members, those with Pay It Forward vouchers, people called Manita Dennett. No, it doesn't.
that doesn't count.
You don't count, no. But festival standbys can be booked in person. So if you fancy that one, then get yourself down to the Dome for 8 o'clock. Is it 8 o'clock?
It's 7:30. So you better fly like the wind if you listen to the live show. And there's also Common People, which is on at Brighton Hove High School.
There's tickets for that as well.
Okay, yeah. That's on at 8 o'clock tonight. And we had a chat with Damien Barr on yesterday's programme. This is an anthology of 33 working class writers, some of whom are well known, like award-winning Brighton author Damien Barr. Stuart McConey is in it, and a lot of some lesser known writers as well. So it's a platform for new working class writing. They're all memoirs. And so some of the people,
I think they've got four of them along there this evening talking about the anthology and their part in it.
Yeah, yeah. So as we mentioned earlier, Dead Dog in a Suitcase. So Thursday is officially Dead Dog Day, where we'll be looking at that one. Unfinished Violin, we already had heard from as well. That's Sam Sweeney. Tonight, 8 o'clock at All Saints Church.
Busy Wednesday night.
It's a very busy Wednesday night. And if you've got very, very, very fast legs and you can fly like the wind down to Dukes of Comedia, the John McEnroe film in the Realm of Perfection is on as well. We were talking about that yesterday. You know, I have no interest in tennis and I have less interest in John McEnroe, but it sounds like a fantastic film. It's a kind of French existentialist film taken from some unseen archive footage of John McEnroe, which was sitting mouldering in a cupboard, and then it was created into this kind of poetic vision of John McEnroe and tennis.
It was like 1968 French Open, I think it's based on.
Like,
so
yeah.
it was doing the French existentialist sporting stuff.
1984.
Yeah,
not that
McEnroe.
Old. John McEnroe, yeah. Right.
Hang on, I'm just going to lie down in a dark room. Oh, dear, honestly.
It's not Fred Perry, you know.
Oh, moving swiftly on. Tell us about something else that's happening.
Well, this Sunday at All Saints Church, the Brighton Youth Orchestra are going to be performing a fiesta of music from around the world.
We're going to hear from a quartet of some of the musicians that are going to be involved. And they serenaded the opening of the 2019 Brighton Festival during a trip on the I-360.
And I wish everyone hadn't talked all the way through it.
Hi, I'm Rama and I play violin.
I'm Abby and I play cello.
Now, you were playing today on the I-360. It sounded absolutely beautiful. What does it mean to you to be part of Brighton's youth music?
I think it's just been a very enriching experience for us. It's great for us to get to interact with other young musicians, sort of build a community in that, and also give back to other people, help other younger players improve in the way that older players helped us when we were younger. So all in all, just quite a nice thing to do.
You're going to be playing at the Brighton Festival at All Saints Church, which is a fantastic venue. What does it feel like to be a part of such a major national event?
It's quite nerve-wracking but exciting.
Yeah, it's good. I think we're the only non-professional group who are playing in the festival, so it just feels like quite a privilege to get to be part of it and enjoy, you know, all the community that brings.
Hello, my name's Peter Chivers and I head up the Music and Arts Service in Brighton & Hove.
You must be incredibly proud of these people.
Oh, they're amazing. It's really inspiring to work with these young musicians and hear they playing on a regular basis and how much practice they put in, week out to get to that standard. It's amazing.
And obviously, it's a great acknowledgement for young people like we have here to be playing as part of the Brighton Festival.
Oh, it's absolutely an incredible experience for any musician, but also young musicians to play as part of the, as you say, an international festival and be alongside some of the world's great musicians and performers.
The importance of music education can't be underestimated.
No, music education is, you know, vital for every young person in the city, whatever genre, whatever style of music they're interested in. So I think it's a really core part of any young person's life and curriculum in the school.
I'm going to come back to you. So you're playing as part of the Brighton Festival. Where do you see this being a springboard to as a future career as a classical musician?
Definitely the tools that I've learned playing in groups and learning how to communicate better through music and just verbally as well. I think I'll carry those through with me, whatever I end up doing.
All of the experience that the Brighton Youth Orchestra has given will definitely enhance my further education.
That was members of the Brighton Youth Orchestra very rudely being talked over by people as they performed on the I-360. I'd love to have heard them, but everyone was chattering.
Well, yes, but it was at a launch event for the I-360. They did some invited guests along. We managed to sneak our way in to go up and have a look at the rooftops. And people do tend to chatter.
They do, don't they? They do. Anyway, that's a really gorgeous music there for Brighton Youth Orchestra. They are going to be performing a fiesta of music from around the world at All Saints Church in Hove this Sunday at 5. And there will not be chatter there, I'm sure. I'm sure everyone will be on their best behaviour. You've been listening to the Brighton Festival special show with Melita Dennett and Rebecca Sandals on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, DAB and online Monday to Friday 5 to 6 p.m. during the festival, repeated 10 o'clock the same night, 9 a.m. the next day.
Can't believe we've whizzed through another hour. Better
yeah.
Thank the guests. Wanda Ibizaye, I've forgotten how to pronounce her name. Apologies, Wanda, that's dreadful of me. My pronunciation is shocking. Hilary Cook, Petra Massey, Yael Flexer and Nick Sandiland. I really do need to go and lie down
there,
in
you
a dark room. Apologies, but Wanda, I absolutely loved your installation, so forgive me.
She can't say your name, but she loved your installation, and I'm with her on that as well. So I'm Alita Nate. Thank you very much for listening.
I'm Rebecca Sandals, and we'll be back pronouncing things, names and everything else correctly, hopefully, at the same time tomorrow. Thanks.
And yes, it is that time of year. It's the invasion of the giant lanyards. So we're going to have a little bit of a nod to finish off the programme towards The Great Escape this weekend. One of my favourite Brighton bands. Only going to be playing Brighton bands, of course. Penelope Isles, who I've been banging on about for years. They're playing Saturday night at the Salis Benny Theatre as a part of The Great Escape Festival. This is Penelope Isles and Chlorine. From me, Melita and Rebecca, thanks for listening. Bye.